Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
go, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for
this nation. Under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
It is Missouri Grassroots Radio. It's the Monday night hour of truth on August 6th, and we are live as the voice of liberty. This is the Bellwether State, Missouri, and you know, we were just talking about the Bellwether State in a little bit of something today, Lisa, before we get on to the real hard news. In November, we're going to be, tomorrow, we're going to be voting on Amendment 2. If you'll remember back to our, you and I actually were on the air. I went back and listened to this today with Mike McGee, who was the driver of that amendment. He'd been working 5 years to get that amendment to the people. And the night you and I interviewed him, he was in Washington, D.C. Do you remember that? And he was pushing this this very amendment. Missouri was the first state to do this. And he specifically said that this amendment was designed to introduce prayer into the schools. So, I mean, that is not, I know that the amendment says that elected officials can lead or have a pastor in. He specifically said that that would apply to schools as well. So that is not an unintended consequence here. In spite of the fact that people are running around saying that that's not going to be a result. But we are the only state that's trying to do this, and he was up in Washington, D.C. then talking to some Religious Liberty Council, and they're trying to push that out to all 50 states. So, yippee, Missouri, a bellwether once more.
I'm not so sure that that's a good thing.
Well, okay.
I don't like Amendment 2.
No, me neither. And you and I are going to spend some time with that after we get finished with our guest tonight, because that really is the biggie on the ballot for everybody that's listening. I mean, we could go down the list of everybody's representative, but you know what? And I was thinking, and now this thing's over tomorrow, Lisa. Are you glad about that?
I'm ready for the party. I'm tired of it.
You're going to some parties.
Yep, I'm going to try to hit a few of the after parties for the election watch night, and I'll be calling in with updates.
Yeah, great. Now, you know, as I talk around, and as I've said before, you and I both, we keep kind of closed circles. I mean, I have some liberal friends and I have some progressive friends, but as far as tight circles go, you know, the people in my tight circle are either like me or right of me, you know, you and Terry and Vaughn way over there on the right of where I'm at. But nobody to the left of me in my close circles. And as I travel around and talk around and look around, I believe really that for the grassroots patriot movement, for the movement that I've quit calling the Tea Party, because it's so much more than the Tea Party, isn't it? I think this race to replace McCaskill is probably the only thing that there's not pretty unified feeling about. How do you feel? I mean, I don't hear anybody in the grassroots movement talking about Dave Spence.
No.
I don't hear anybody in the grassroots movement except me talking about Adam Warren.
You and I disagree about the. I like Adam Warren, and I think he's got a bright political future.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to win tomorrow. But
no, I don't
think
either.
Again, But yeah. I would say I don't think that Martin is. I don't think you. I think you can consider him part of the grassroots movement. I think he, even though he was a heavily involved in the Blunt administration, he holds a lot of very grassroots policies and initiatives close. So I think that the grassroots like Martin.
Oh, good, good. I mean, I said on the radio the night I said I was going to vote for Adam Warren that I'm not going to be up. You know, I can cast that vote quite comfortably because I'm not going to be disappointed or feel that we're done badly, whichever one of these guys wins. I think that is a race where you could just flip a coin and do as well with heads or tails.
Yeah, I think actually Ed's probably I think he's probably got a little bit more experience and know how, but I definitely think that Warren is his day will come.
Yeah.
Do believe.
But I really think this this Aiken, Bruner, Steelman thing is probably the one that's got the grassroots fairly divided. Still,
yeah. Evenly split, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although tomorrow we could just see a runaway candidate, I kind of feel like, you know, I don't know that, well, I don't know. You know, I hate to say because it could go either way. It could be a squeaker all the way to the end. You could see one person surge out.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it could be. And the last polls that I saw, Bruner was holding a not nearly as comfortable as even a week ago, but still a comfortable lead.
Yeah, and I heard that Aiken had made a surge. So
right. Yeah, so, that's what I say. He has made a surge, and Bruner's lead is not nearly as comfortable as it was. I think the poll that I saw before this morning's was 5 days old, and Aiken had closed quite a bit of ground in that 5 days.
Yeah, and that late surge this close to the election makes me think that maybe we could see a runaway candidate.
Yeah. Yeah, could be an out of control runaway candidate.
All out of control.
Yeah, and I am, you know, just the opposite of how I am with Warren Martin, where I, you know, I'm not going to be upset if either one of them wins. This senatorial election for me in the primary is really a Romney election. I mean, I don't like any one of these. None of these three are grassroots conservative. I don't like any one of them.
I like some better than others. You know, it's kind of it is like a Romney election. You got to get McCaskill out. You got to get Obama out.
Right.
You know, I am gonna have to be heavily sedated on election day in November to go vote for Romney. But I am gonna do it. It's gonna hurt.
I'll send you a fifth of vodka.
Okay, it's gonna take some sedation, some anesthesia to get it done.
Yeah, the where I'm looking at though, and I'm gonna tell you, for me, Steelman is out. I mean, any meeny miny mo, Steelman goes first. But the other two, as far as I'm concerned, it boils down for me to. They're both bad and they're both bad to me in different ways. So what is a deal breaker? And that's really where it boils down to. I mean, which one of these negatives is an absolute deal breaker for me?
Well, I'll tell, you know, here I go, but Bruner, you know, I had a private meeting with him on educational issues and I don't like him in education. And, you know, of course, Aiken I do like on education. So, you know, that's kind of a tipping point for me. And then, you know, it's a gut feeling. It's a personal gut feeling and opinion only. But I just don't know that I trust him. Bruner, that is. I'm not sure that I trust Bruner to do what he says he's going to do. I'm hoping... You know, I'm hoping I'm wrong about it, but I'm just not sure that I trust them. So, and that's only a personal gut reaction. So, and me, the person who tells you to not get emotionally, make emotional decisions about your candidates, I think I'm probably doing that on this race.
Well, you know, and I don't know that I would call it what I feel emotional, but I really feel betrayed You know, I understand you, for you, the deal breaker is education. And so that's why you broke in this particular race that is the the best of three evils, in my book. I'm not going to forgive, the debt ceiling increase, and I'm not going to forgive the NDAA, and I'm not going to forgive, the Patriot Act extension, which are three items that are very dear, to the grassroots, and it amazes me to no end, as much belly aching as we see going on in the grassroots organizations about NDAA and the Patriot Act and spending and the debt ceiling increase, that's not a deal breaker, that we're even still sitting here quibbling over this in this race.
Well, you know, I think those are all valid points, and I wouldn't disagree. But it's really hard. You're not comparing apples to apples because Brunner does not have a record to run on.
So, true. You aren't. And I agree with you 100%. And so the way I approach that, with Brunner having no record to run on, and he doesn't, and his record, you know, and I hear all the negatives, and I hear Brunner, I hear all the crud. But the way I approach something like Brunner has no record to run on is, here I've got a guy who has proven to me he can't carry the water. And here I've got another guy who says, give me a chance because I can do it. And I'm looking at needing somebody to do the job for 4 years. So do I hire the guy that's proven to me he can't do it? Or do I give the guy a chance who has no record and assures me he can?
It's a coin toss. I totally understand that.
Here I am carrying on, and Lisa, I don't know if you've noticed, but the Lieutenant Governor is in the house.
Well, hello, Lieutenant Governor. How are you this evening?
Greetings. Thank you for having me. I'm great.
Okay.
Peter Kinzer, running for Lieutenant Governor against Brad Lager in the primary tomorrow. How are you feeling tonight, Lieutenant Governor? How are you looking at your campaign?
I'm quietly confident. I'm not overconfident. I've been campaigning very hard. I've spent much of the summer in Southwest Missouri, meeting with grassroots folks, candidate forums, conservative events like the Southwest Missouri Conservative Network event last Thursday night in Joplin, also Republican barbecues and picnics, and just meeting people across the state, but with a heavy emphasis in Southwest Missouri. And I feel pretty good about the way things are going, but I anything but overconfident. I've taken my conservative record to people all across the state. Whether it was fighting for traditional marriage, I passed the first bill defining marriage as a union between one man and one woman back in 1996 when I was in the Senate in my first term, and we were still in the minority. I was dreaming of getting the Senate majority for us conservatives, which came in the winter of 2001. But then the next year, 1997, I passed the first bill and put it on Mel Carnahan's desk that banned partial birth abortion in Missouri. And when he vetoed that bill, I led the override effort. We then got the majority. The reason we got the majority was largely because of that fight in 1997 on partial birth abortion, because every Democrat senator who switched his vote, who had voted for the bill on passage and then voted against the bill to sustain Carnahan's veto, every one of those four Democratic senators lost his seat at the next election, and that's what got us the majority. When we went up with a majority in 2001, I became the first Republican Senate President pro tem in 53 years, and I immediately set about cutting the budget. I found ghost employees on the Senate payroll, and I cut the budget 20% in a few months. We increased the conservative majority every year on my watch, 2002 and 2004. When I left the Senate to become Lieutenant Governor after the 2004 election, we had the largest conservative majority in the history of Missouri at 23-11. So I have a history of battling for conservative causes. One of the things we did, your listeners may be interested to know, that up to 2003, in over 180 years of statehood, there had only been six, that is half a dozen, successful veto overrides of a governor's veto in the history of the state. I led the Missouri Senate in overriding Bob Holden's veto of the right to carry concealed weapons. In September of 2003, we successfully overrode three of Bob Holden's vetoes in one day, one of which was that override on the right to carry concealed weapons. So we extended to Missourians the right, the natural extension of the right of self-defense, that is, the right to carry concealed, making Missouri the 37th state to have that right. I'm immensely proud of that, and immensely proud of the fact that I'm the only candidate in the race who is endorsed by the National Rifle Association because of that history of delivering for conservative issues in our state and gun rights. I'm also the only candidate in the race who has the Defender of Life Award for Missouri Right to Life on my wall. And that was for my battle on partial birth abortion. Now, 2 years ago this summer, I saw that no one else in state government was going to stand up and fight Obamacare. So being the only conservative to survive the election 4 years ago, and the only Republican in statewide office, watching Governor Nixon be a spectator on the issue, watching Attorney General Coster be a spectator on the issue, I said, somebody's got to stand up for the rights of Missourians to direct our own health care choices. So I went to the federal courthouse in my hometown and filed a constitutional challenge to overturn Obamacare. That lawsuit is Kinder versus Geithner, Holder, Sebelius, et al. And there is not a nickel of your taxpayer money in my lawsuit. I undertook the obligation, the solemn duty, to raise the private funds to fund the six-figure lawyer bills to stand up for the rights of Missourians on health care.
That brings up a good question, and the question is rooted in the reason you had to do this.
Yes.
Of the offices that are currently held by Democrats, which one in your mind is the most important for us to capture?
Well, obviously the governorship. The governorship is the most important. That office is the chief executive of the state, has the most jobs, appoints all the cabinet officials, and has an enormous influence on the course of events in our state. And right now, the occupant of that office, Jay Nixon, is a yes man for the Obama, Pelosi, Reid, left liberal project to dismantle our Constitution and make the state serfs of the federal government. That's really what my battle on health care is about. It's about 10th Amendment rights. It's about dual sovereignty of the states having a role in our dual sovereignty and pushing back against the federal overreach and destruction of our liberty.
Right. And I do want to say I congratulate you on that. I've been an admirer of your stand on that for some time. I've been watching that since you started, and I was incredibly disappointed that you had to do that, because the attorney who's supposed to be our attorney couldn't take 71% of the people of Missouri to Washington, D.C.
Right, exactly. And Missouri should have been one of the 26, 27, 28, or 30 states. Ended up with 26 in the Florida case. We should have been in there.
Yep. Okay.
And I did the only thing I could do, and that was file a constitutional challenge as an individual citizen, and also...
Uh-oh, did we...
We did. We lost him.
Okay. I'll back, Peter Kinder.
So, we wanted to ask him about a couple or three issues here that I think are pretty important to our listeners, and I'm interested in where he stands. Is that his number?
I'm back on.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
We do hear you. Okay, sorry about that. I do want to get into some of the issues that are of considerable importance to our listeners. Where do you stand on the replacing the corporate and income tax with a sales tax?
It is a dream of mine to Missouri, and has long been a dream of mine, to move Missouri to that category of states that has no income tax.
Okay.
The nine states that have no income tax, Texas, Florida, Wyoming, Washington, Tennessee, New Hampshire, Nevada, Florida, they're doing better than states like Missouri. They're moving ahead of us, and,
yep.
and we need to move in that direction.
Okay, great, great. That and I thought that's what you were going to say, but you and I had not talked about that specific thing ever before, and so I wanted to get that out there for our folks. But we're going to stick with what can we do about jobs. What do you think we'd ought to do about tort reform?
Well, I have a years-long history of battling for tort reform when I was Senate leader and even before I was Senate leader in the Missouri Senate. I fought for tort reform. I led the passage of tort reform when Bob Holden was governor and I was president pro tem of the Senate. He vetoed the bill. We fell short of overriding his veto on tort reform. And then I became lieutenant governor the next year. And we finally succeeded. We had a governor in Matt Blunt who would sign the bill. The Republican legislature passed it in the first 60 days in 2005. Matt Blunt signed it into law in March. And we've had great results until 12 days ago when the Missouri Supreme Court struck down the caps on non-economic damages, which was a key part of tort reform. And now we're going to have to fight that portion of the battle all over again.
Okay.
The liberal trial lawyers are getting what they paid for.
Yep, that's right.
They're getting what they paid for. And Missouri consumers of health care and physicians and surgeons are the losers.
Well, not only that.
They're going to be small towns that are not going to have any OBGYN coverage because they cannot afford the liability insurance.
That's exactly right. But it's not only about, we talk about tort reform a lot when we talk about medical and medical care and medical insurance in general, but
right.
Tort reform also goes all the way down to attracting business to Missouri. I mean, if you could get some kind of a loser pay system in so that it no longer behooves the Piggly Wigglies of the world to settle a $10,000 lawsuit because somebody claims they tripped over a spot
yeah.
of water in the floor, then you've got a big attractor for business.
Yes, and we need to move to loser pays. This has always been a dream of mine. I was never sure whether it was attainable, but guess what? In the last year, Texas has passed loser pays.
Yep.
Other states are moving toward it. I know Nikki Haley wants to pass loser pays in South Carolina, and other states are awakening that this is the new frontier in tort reform. Loser pays. Let's introduce some doubt in the mind of the filers of these frivolous lawsuits.
Exactly.
Let's introduce some doubt in their minds in which there might be some real pain out of their pocket if they file a real bogus lawsuit.
And take away the incentive that the insurance company has to just pay these people some cash to get them out of the way.
Absolutely. And the other thing we need to do on the jobs front, beyond this legal reform, is right to work.
Okay. That was going to be my next question. So basically, and you're talking about right to work the way it sits or tried to get through this time around. I want to talk to you about that for just one second, and then I'm going to let Lisa have a shot at you, and then we'll wrap up because I know you've got something else you've got to get to. You are constitutionally now the president of the Senate.
Right.
Tell me what happened. I mean, there is absolute disappointment out here on the ground about this Senate that we thought we'd sent a bunch of conservatives into that couldn't even get Obamacare nullification through. And I know, I'm not pointing my finger at you because I know the lieutenant governor doesn't puppet master the Senate and pull all the strings
and
get to decide what comes to the floor and what doesn't. But you are close to that process, and
yes,
we're just kind of interested in what the heck happened there. I mean, how can they talk about requiring everybody to have a prescription to buy Sudafed and at the same time not get Obamacare nullification done?
Right. Well, we had some squishy leadership. We had leadership. Now, you can be for term limits or you can be against term limits. I happen to support term limits. But term limits are going to have a good effect on the problem you just put your finger on, Dave.
Right.
Some well-timed retirements are coming in the next few months. And you always lose some good people, but you lose some people who you won't miss at all.
Yep.
And there was a vacuum of leadership, a complete failure of leadership, a complete failure to understand the responsibilities of leadership. When you get majorities as big as we are handed by the voters,
exactly,
it's important to do something with them, mm-hmm, and to act on that conservative mandate. And for the last 2 years, that mandate has largely been squandered.
Yep, and that is the thing down here. And as we move right from that, then I can't help but imagine that what you've just described. How do you feel? Do you feel there is a huge anti-incumbent, anti the guy that's been there for a long time? Do you feel like you're working against that out there?
I don't, because that's not what I get from the grassroots when I lay out my record of conservative reform and fighting for limited constitutional government and actually delivering results instead of just making speeches. So,
okay, good. I'm imagining myself that we'll see a pretty close race between you and something we've never had in Missouri before, and that is a real third-party contender. I'm guessing that this is really going to be you and Cynthia out there slugging it out right to the very end because of the real closeness that you guys have in conservatism on the issues.
But we'll see about that.
Well, I I'm not saying you're going to lose. I'm saying that you're going to be out there slugging it out with her. And I don't. I personally don't look at my feeling down here at the street level is that the state is going to go very, very conservative this time around, and we're going to demand results from our elected officials. Lisa, have you got something for Lieutenant Governor?
Well, I think you kind of already touched on it. I would really like to know why we haven't been able to get more traction here in Missouri on things like loser pays tort reform. Tort reform, I mean, the judicial system in Missouri is a big damn mess. You know, it's a big damn mess everywhere, but it's really bad here in Missouri. And the legal system is just horrible. And also, since education is near and dear to my heart, you know, they've been pushing through this liberal form of education reform in the House and the Senate, and I think it was mostly driven in the Senate this last couple of sessions, and I just wondered what your opinion was of that.
Well, I have been called by the Teachers Union, the NEA, the number one proponent of school choice in the state of Missouri in public life, and they mean that as an insult. I take it as a compliment. I want to strap the funding to the child and let the parents direct that funding wherever they want to go.
Vouchers?
You bet.
Okay.
School choice, full bore school choice, public, private, parochial, homeschooling. Let's go with it and put the parents in charge of their own children's education, including maximum homeschooling options. Now, they have labeled me for that battle, for standing up for the rights of parents. As long as 16 years ago, they labeled me the number one enemy of public schools in the state of Missouri. Now,
good.
I'm a product of the public schools. Public schools that are worthy of competing should have nothing to fear from the school choice regime that I have outlined here. Public schools that make themselves choice worthy, fine, bring them on. But I will tell you, we have largely been defeated in our effort to increase parental choice in education by Republican lawmakers from Southwest Missouri.
That's an interesting statement. You want to elaborate on that?
And they are conservatives. But if you go into a small town, I'm just going to pick some at random: Monette, Aurora, Purdy, Ava. The public school in that town, with its basketball team or its football team, that's a major part of the identity of that town. But for some reason, these people seem to regard it as a threat. But I'm in the battle for the long haul, trying to increase parental freedom to choose any school, and I have all the scars to show for it.
Okay, well, let's talk about Common Core standards and how they've been implemented in Missouri and how that might reach across lines to homeschoolers and private schoolers, because the Common Core has been implemented in Missouri. It's been adopted by DESE, you know, outside the purview of the legislature, and, you know, that has great potential to just undermine parental choice on all kinds of levels, not only in public schools but private schools and homeschooling as well, because Common Core is all based on assessments, and if assessments aren't, you know, if kids in private schools and homeschooling aren't passing the assessments to get into college, they won't be able to get into college. So how do you attack a problem like Common Core and the Department of Education, who brings these things in outside the purview of the legislature?
Well, I think we need some constitutional reform on DESE. DESE is governed by school board members who are appointed for incredibly long terms, 6 or 7 year terms, and they're once they're confirmed, they're a law unto themselves, as your example illustrates. And I think we need to pare back the powers of DESE, Department of Elementary Secondary Education, and the school board that governs DESE in the Constitution. And I share your suspicion of and hostility to Common Core standards, and all I can say is I resist them every way I can, and believe that parents know best what is necessary to educate their children, and we should all resist them. Let me give you an example that goes back not 20 years, but pretty close to 20 years. And, you know, government has these Orwellian names for laws that they pass. Like the Obamacare, the official name of Obamacare is the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. I refuse to call it that because that's a big government Orwellian name. But in 1993, my first year in the Senate, Mel Carnahan passed something that they called the Outstanding Schools Act. It was Senate Bill 380. You know what one thing it did that outraged me? It required school board members elected at the local level to undergo training by DESE.
Yeah, I remember having to go through that training.
Wow.
It said, were you a school board member?
Yes, I was.
Okay. In my first term in the Senate, I wrote columns in the newspaper. I used to be in the newspaper business at the Southeast Missouri, and I was writing twice weekly conservative columns and getting attacked for the positions. But you know what I said on that issue? I said, I'm looking for a school board member to refuse to do the training.
Where were you, Lisa?
I'm looking for a little passive or active resistance here to an overweening state bureaucracy in which a school board member would just stand up and say, no, thank you. I'm not going to do your training. I was elected by the people of Springfield or Joplin or Boonville, and I'm answerable to them and to no one else, and I'm not going to do your training. And what are you going to do to me if I refuse to go to your government-approved training? You know, Missouri got along fine for 180 years without having to have locally elected school board members go and submit to state training.
I would have known. I would have been your guinea pig at the time.
Lisa was a school board member just long enough to realize that she needed to get her kids out of the school.
Yeah. Well, I admire that, but I found a few takers. And Desi made noises like they would sue a school district if their members didn't take the training, but I think the whole thing kind of died down and nobody was disciplined for not doing it. But we ought to repeal that. That would be a very healthy step, to go back and repeal that effort, little part of the Outstanding Schools Act from 1993 that required school board members to undergo, you know, Desi brainwashing.
Excellent.
Okay, we're going to take two more minutes here, and then you're going to wrap up by telling us where we can find you and what you need us to do for you. I want to,
yes,
to move just quickly to because everything we've talked about tonight is basically just the general what's wrong with Missouri and what do we need to do about it, and that's all in recognition, of course, that the number one job of the lieutenant governor is to be one car wreck away from the governor's mansion.
Right.
I think it's incredibly important that we find out how you feel about those things that you would carry across the street with you. But
well, thanks. And I am the only candidate in the race who has been acting governor for 105 days.
Yes.
When Matt Lunt was governor, he transferred power to me. I signed bills into law when he was out of the state. I signed bills into law. I made appointments to boards and commissions. I called the National Guard out to fight a flood in northeast Missouri. So I did everything that a governor does.
And how hard is it for you? This is just something that occurred to me while you were saying that. How hard is it for you to do your job with a governor of the opposite kin?
It is not easy. this governor communicates not at all.
Right.
He communicates not at all with me or with my office. In 3.5 years since we took the oath of office, we've had exactly one substantive conversation, and that was a conversation that I forced him to have with me when he was trying to cut off funding for the Tour of Missouri professional cycling race that I had put on.
Okay, so moving away then from that for just a second, as the lieutenant governor, you're pretty active in veteran affairs, and you're pretty active in affairs for the elderly. And
yes,
for the aged, what is tell us quickly, just in parting, the one thing in the last 4 years that you are proudest of in the arena of what you see as the day-to-day duties of the lieutenant governor?
Well, I, among the things I'm proudest of is that every candidate will come on your air and talk about talking the talk of fiscal conservatism. I'll tell you two things about my own office budget, which is the smallest to begin with of the statewide elected officials. I have returned money unspent back to the taxpayers every year I've been lieutenant governor out of my office budget allocation. I have, the last budget year, I returned just a hair under 10%. This year it was 7.5% unspent. I found that you can actually walk the walk, not just talk the talk, the fiscal conservatism.
That's impressive.
Not only that, Dave, but I have the last 2 years gone into the budget committee of the House that writes the budgets for all of us statewide officials and said, give me less in the coming budget year than you gave me last year.
And still,
because I found a way to operate the office for less and save the taxpayers money.
Good. Without cutting anything out.
Yes, sir. And
good.
And I've actually found a way, just through common sense management, to deliver better services for less money and return money to the taxpayer. I believe I'm the only statewide elected official who's done that.
Good. Okay, Lieutenant Governor,
okay.
I know you've got to go. We'd keep you
Thank
on here
you.
For the whole 90 minutes, but Dana told me that to be sure and get you out of here on time. So take the last 2 minutes and tell us where we go to find you, where we go to donate money, and what you need from us.
Yeah, thank you for having me again. I'm immensely proud to represent Missourians as Lieutenant Governor and honored to be on your show. It's peterkinder.com, peterkinder.com. You can go there and sign up to help the campaign, make a donation, get involved at the grassroots level. I'm going to be touring the state for the next 92 days leading up to the election, and I'm really humbled by the chance to serve and fight for conservative causes in Missouri. I am endorsed by the two great American conservative icons and leaders for, who hail from the state of Missouri, Rush Limbaugh, and also Phyllis Schlafly, founder of Eagle Forum and a great constitutional conservative leader. So thank you so much, peterkinder.com.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. And as we too infrequently do, I want to thank you for putting yourself out there and running for this office. We forget the sacrifices that people make to just even run for these offices. You know, 90, 120 days running around the state, home one night a week. And we want to thank you for your service in the past, too. Have a great night, Lieutenant Governor, and thanks very much for coming.
Thanks so much. You too.
That was Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder. He's running to do that for another 4 years. He came on and he told us that he was the most conservative person running for this job. Now you were here the other night when we talked to Shane.
Shane's running for SOS.
We haven't even talked to Brad Lauger. Brad Lauger did not want to come talk to us. He did talk to you though, didn't he, Lisa?
I have an interview with Brad Lauger, yes.
Yes. He didn't want to come see us. And to be fair, I want to say that most of our guests come and talk to us for 90 minutes, but Lieutenant Governor Kinder would only agree to 30 minutes through his handler, Dana, or his publicist. I don't want to call her his handler. And so, you know, that is 30 minutes more than Brad Lauger was willing to give the Hour of Truth. And so, and it's not like we waited till the last minute to ask Brad either. He's had ample time to try to fit us in if he wanted to. Okay, Lisa, what'd you think of that?
It's all part of the same rhetoric that we've been hearing. You know, I've heard it from both sides. There are obviously a lot of things that we didn't challenge him on that we could have probably challenged him on.
And that's one reason not to come for 90 minutes, too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we actually let that go a little long. We went through the break we should have had about 10 minutes ago. So what we're going to do is Lisa and I are going to go grab a sip of something because our voices are getting raw. We're going to take a little longer break than usual. We're going to run 2 1-minute ads, so it'll be a 2.5-minute break, and then we'll come back. This is Dave, and it's Lisa on Missouri Grassroots Radio Network, the voice of liberty. This is the Monday night Hour of Truth.
I'm telling you why. Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
Okay, Missouri Patriots, I don't have to remind you that our ancestors fought and died for our right to exercise our voices and shape government in the interests of the people. And yet, in most elections, less than 20% of the population bothers to vote. Gas prices are outrageous, the economy is a disaster, and we are being regulated to death. Bad government and weak leadership are destroying the American way of life on a national and state level, and it's time to send a message to Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City and tell them we have had enough. If you're not registered to vote, the deadline to be eligible to vote in the August primary is July 11th, and October 10th for the general election in November. The Patriot Revolution begins in 2012, and it happens at the polls. Vote in the August primary and the November general election, and bring a friend. The Constitutional Republic depends on it.
I've got a feeling that the night is turning.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The Voice of Liberty is back in the form of Dave and in the form of Lisa, and it is Monday night, Hour of Truth on Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. Okay, Lisa, that last commercial, that was it. You know, it is tomorrow, and it is important to, that these people get out there and vote, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And really, you know, I heard on the radio somewhere that they're only projecting a 25% turnout for the election tomorrow, which is very sad. I hope we get a much larger turnout, because this shapes the general election in November, and this gives you an opportunity to you know, have some control over how things go down.
Oh, absolutely. You have got I mean, I can count right here, I could just start naming names of races out there where the Republican is going to win in November, and where on tomorrow you are going to choose either an establishment, old school Republican, like the ones we keep saying we're sick of, or a citizen legislator to replace him. I mean, those are going to be the choices in race after race after race after race tomorrow, including the one in my own district, including a couple up in your part of the state.
Right.
But district by district by district, you're just going to see that over and over and over again. And if the grassroots wants to make a difference, if the grassroots wants to take this government back, what better time to do it than in an election where only 25% of everybody is projected to come out? I mean, if you can get out of bed in the morning, get down to the poll to get your I voted sticker, you've got a real shot at turning this thing around.
Well, you know, that's the hope, you know, and I think it'll just be very interesting to see how things turn out tomorrow evening, you know, if the grassroots have come out in force to support those grassroots candidates.
And we'll be here, folks. We'll be here to tell you about it, because tomorrow night, we're excited about this, is our watch party. We're going to be on an hour later. We're going to be on at 8 o'clock. We'll be on from 8 to 10. Most of the results should be in by 10, so we'll be keeping you posted on results from around the state. We'll be calling around to the various victory parties and talking to some actual candidates, some actual campaigners, some staffers. We'll be getting the whoops and the hollers. Lisa will be coming to us live. Actually, she'll be co-hosting with us tomorrow live from like three different watch parties. Go ahead.
Call in. I'll be touring the St. Louis area, but feel free to call in from other parts of the state and let us know how your watch party is going.
Absolutely, by all means, and especially if you're a grassroots activist and you're winning, we want to hear it. We want to hear about it, and we want to share in your excitement, because we certainly will. We'll be very, very excited. And then Tuesday, I haven't talked to Vaughn yet. I don't know if she's feeling better. I really don't know if we'll have Vaughn tomorrow. If we don't, we won't have Vaughn tomorrow, because tomorrow we just talked about is our watch night party. Duh. Wednesday, what are you going to do Wednesday, Lisa?
Wednesday. Let me grab my notes here. I know that Tom Martz will be on to tell us about Locke and Smith and give us an update on that organization and the candidates that are eligible for the Locke and Smith Foundation.
Well, he's in a race tomorrow night too, isn't he?
I believe that he is.
I believe
so
he
we
is.
Should, hopefully we'll have some good news from him.
Yeah.
And we are going to have a legislative wrap, an election day wrap-up. You and I are going to kind of go over the important races across the state and kind of wrap those up and kind of go over and see how, you know, give our analysis of the election. And I'm working on a couple of interviews, hoping to make those happen. I don't want to announce them until I know for sure. And that's probably it.
Okay, and then on Thursday night, we'll be back with the Hour of Truth, which, by the way, folks, is actually going to become an Hour of Truth now. We're through the primary. That was our hot and heavy season. We took entire 90-minute segments, and we tried to bring you the real grassroots candidates. And just let me, you know, you all remember how we started this. We had this big plan. We were going to go district by district by district. We were going to talk to both candidates. And what we found by the third week of that experiment is the grassroots candidates were anxious to come talk to us, and the establishment candidates were anxious to stay away. So we had entire show scheduled to have two people or sometimes three people come along, and only one person would show up. And that would leave us just talking to this one person. So I said, heck with it. Heck with it. What we're going to do is we're going to go out and we're going to hand pick the grassroots candidates, the candidates that you folks, you patriots, want to hear from. And then we're going to give them the whole 90 minutes. And we're not even going to talk to the Englers of the world. We're going to talk to the Robinsons, and we're going to talk to the Parkers, and we're going to talk to the Emerys, and we're going to give them 90 minutes, and with that time, we're going to get through the one-liners, we're going to get through the sound bites, we're going to get right down into this person's soul and find out why they're conservative and what that means to them, and I think it's been very fruitful. I've really enjoyed it. I believe I've talked to one or two candidates who I'm friends with, aside from just, you know, having a radio chat. And I'm convinced that they enjoyed it. It was laid back. It was really quite conversational. It was more of a biography hour than a McNeil Learer report. I don't feel I need to apologize to the listening audience because I didn't come out and argue with these people. You know, I come here night after night after night, and I just rant and I rave and I holler and I scream. So, hell, there isn't anybody out there listening to this show who doesn't know how I feel about term limits. So, I mean, why should I take a candidate and challenge him on term limits when what I want is for you folks out there to hear how he thinks, he or she thinks, and why he or she thinks that way. And I'm not here to try to change their mind or to try to make them look bad for you. You can, you know, you're grassroots activists, you're pretty darn smart. And there's no reason for me to have to do that and try to turn this show into something about me. So anyway, Thursday, we're going to come back and we're going to continue with the wrap. Lisa may or may not. Are you going to make it Thursday, Lisa, or do you know yet?
Well, I don't know yet. Let me check. I think I can make it.
Okay, and I'm excited about that because what we're going to do for you on Thursday, folks, is we're going to start moving on. We're going to talk. We're going to talk for the first time here about a couple of issues coming up on the November election, and that is Amendment 3 and Prop E. And we're going to start into some in-depth discussion about the pros and cons of Prop E and Amendment 3. And, of course, we'll be carrying that on until November. We'll be talking to guests on Prop E and Amendment 3. We'll be ranting about it. We'll be giving you our take on it. But we're going to introduce those to you on Thursday night. So if you want to participate, do your homework, and then give us a call Thursday night at 347-677-1835. Then Friday, of course, is the roundtable, and I'm sure that we will still have some things to discuss and argue about the election. And then I want to close tonight, Lisa, with you and I making one more plea to people about something tomorrow that is very, very, very important, and that is Amendment 2.
Do not vote for Amendment 2. It is not going to enhance your religious freedom. The only way you can enhance your religious freedom is by you taking charge of it yourself. You've already got all of the religious freedoms that people can have under this Constitution already written in. Amendment 2 may end up backfiring on you and taking taking some of your religious freedoms away by putting in too narrow of language. If you want to enhance your religious freedoms, let's just make sure that judges and legislators uphold the Constitution that we've got.
Absolutely, and I'm going to echo that, and I'm going to do what I do so well, and that is put myself out on a limb. This thing is going to pass. It's going to pass by a quite a margin, and within 3 years, before 3 years from tomorrow, some court is going to have said, in spite of all your hearing from all of the great people out there that are telling you how wonderful this is and how great it is for your Christian rights and for reestablishing Christianity and removing Christians from the boiling oil, some court is going to decide that in fact this does mean that a grade school teacher can lead the class in prayer and establish his or her religion for that classroom, or a principal can do so for the school. Some court is going to decide that based on the wording of this thing. And within 2 years of that, within 5 years of tomorrow, some school teacher or some principal is going to lead their class in a prayer that the average Christian doesn't agree with. And at that point, all of you folks who are voting yes tomorrow will be back to the legislature saying, wah, 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 what do we do now? That's my vote. That's my my prediction. And I think it won't take 5 years, Lisa.
I agree. I think that it's going to come back to bite us a lot sooner than that.
Yep. Okay, that's it. That's a wrap for tonight. Lisa, thank you very, very much. I always enjoy sharing a studio with you. It was a lot of fun. And I'll talk to you tomorrow at the Watch Night Party. Remember, folks, we're coming on an hour later at 8 tomorrow. We'll be on from 8 to 10. Give us a call from your party. Let us know how the mood is there. We'll be watching your results, so we'll kind of know what you're going to say before you call in. But give us a call. Let us talk to you for a while and let us know what the mood is wherever you're partying. And Lisa, you take care of yourself, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you. Same to you, Dave.
This is Dave. That was Lisa. This is the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Hour of Truth for Monday night, August 6th, and we are out of here one more time.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.